Great job, Steve Bertrand. We thank you so much for your expertise.
Didn't he do a great job?
Yes, he did.
I thought he did a great job.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Bill.
Is that
nice to see you.
No more praise?
Oh, they're later on. We're trying to pace ourselves.
Okay.
We don't want to lay it all upon you at the beginning of the show and have nothing left for the other 3 hours. So throughout the day, we will certainly say pleasant things about you, Steve. I promise.
I appreciate that.
You know, absolutely. When we compliment him the most is when we're on the stream.
Yeah.
At noon.
That's a full hour of Steve being complimented by you and me, and callers call in and they say their favorite Steve stories.
I do listen to the stream every day on podcast. So I know
you do?
Not telling the truth.
Oh, hmm.
Right.
You do?
Well, doesn't everybody?
Hmm.
Wow. Yeah, we
He's such a good friend, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes.
He's just doing it so we compliment him again.
Yes.
Is it Friday yet?
No, you got a couple more days till Friday, Wendy. Hi, it's Bill and it's Wendy. Our number is 312-981-7200 should you want to call in or text us. Now, Kevin and I had a discussion earlier, and I don't want to tell you what it was about, but in part
then
of the story...
it's going to be hard to comment on it.
I think it'll be better if you know, right? All right, so part of the story has to do with something that we were going to talk about eventually, but Kevin said you might as well, for the sake of the story, we should probably discuss it today. Kevin, do you want to say it? Because you know me, I'll tear up.
Sure, I can say it. I'm leaving the Bill and Wendy Show.
What?
That's
dumbest
right.
move of your career.
The worst. Yeah. The
strong
worst.
Possibility. That's true. It
the
could be
worst
very,
move you could ever make.
But my wife and I are moving across the country. So, yeah.
She knows this, right?
She knows it, yeah.
You told her this. Mm-hmm.
Bangor, right. Maine.
Yep. It's going to be wonderful.
At least they're married.
What does that mean? What does that mean? At least they're married. Why would you
the
say
name
that?
Of Maine. Come on.
Oh.
Don't even know her.
I got it. all right. So, Kevin, you're good. Now, first of all, we can't even tell you how much you're going to be missed.
And
you have one more month to go, right?
I don't even want to think about it.
I'm going to miss the heck out of you guys, too, and a little bit, Steve.
Come on, Kev.
I'm just kidding. I'll miss you, Steve.
See, it's one of those things, though, that, you know, I'm a baby. I moved to Berwyn, which is four towns over from Brookfield. I moved to LaGrange. I couldn't cut the apron strings, so I'm kind of jealous of his... adventuresomeness.
Yeah, his adventuresomeness.
I mean, really, it's kind of a scary thing, and I think it's awesome. And if you wait for the perfect time, quite honestly, don't, because there's never going to be a perfect time for anything.
Yeah, we're kind of taking a leap of faith. I didn't even say we're going to Los Angeles. We're moving across
the
country.
Where is that?
It's in a sunnier, more beautiful... But Chicago's great, don't get me wrong. I really do love Chicago. But yeah, we're going to Los Angeles.
But you're doing this for career reasons.
Yeah.
Don't lose your Midwest heart, please.
I don't think I ever will. And people keep telling me, like, you better not start rooting for LA team. No, why would I ever do that?
That's not going to happen.
So yeah, we are. But yeah, so for sake of the story that I think you want to get into, you need to know that I'm moving.
So Kevin is now in the process, because he's leaving in a month,
traitor,
of doing all the things you need to do. He's selling off all of his worldly belongings.
You are?
A lot of things, yes. If you go on Sarah's Facebook page, she's got a lot of gems on there. If you need anything, Wendy.
What about instruments and
stuff? It's the trading post.
I don't think so.
It's become the trading post. So Kevin realized that he has to cut ties with his cable company, which you would imagine would go something like this. Hello, cable company. We're moving. We won't need your services anymore. It should be that easy. But it's not.
Because of the contracts, right?
Right.
Because of the contracts. I hate contracts.
Tell Wendy what you told me.
Well, I explained to them that, you know, what, we're moving across the country for work and yada, yada. So where we're moving, Los Angeles, doesn't have this particular carrier.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, so we have to cancel, unfortunately. Otherwise, I'd be keeping you, this and that. And so they ask for my address and go through all the new address, which I think we do have one now, which is pretty cool. But yeah, so
we'll give that out later.
Yeah. But it gets to the point where at the end, and she's like, I was like, okay, so we're all done here, blah, blah, blah. It went really easy. And then she goes, yeah, you're just going to owe a $90 cancellation fee. It's like, wait, this is out of my hands. I'm going across the country. It's for work. I mean, and you guys aren't there. Otherwise, I'd keep you. And she goes, yeah, the only way you can get out of a cancellation fee is if you were to die.
And if you die, what do you need to do?
You need to provide proof of death.
Well, how can you do that if
how
you're
dead? Well, someone close to you has to send them a death certificate. But I'm surprised, number one, that
it's only $90. That's what I think you should just shut up and pay it.
I think because of the moving, it's that rate. But I actually talked him down to 45. Oh, so now at that point, I'm cool. Yep.
That's a good move.
Because I think I've signed my life over to our cable company. I don't think I can quit.
Forever?
I don't know. I don't even know how it works.
But you don't read, nobody reads the contract. Like, they slide this three-page document in front of you, and I've done this with almost everything I've ever signed. It's just like, all right. And then I just sign it and hand it back. It could say you owe $9,000.
Well, I don't know if you had, like, a lot of times it's a three-year deal or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're lucky they're not charging you for the unused portion of your cable bill.
Yeah, I'm still expecting some sort of surprises once I actually get the bill.
Yeah, you're not lucky. They should not be able to charge you for moving.
I know. I mean, I told them.
They should charge you for switching. You know, if you switch to another one,
right,
I can understand that.
That's more reasonable.
Well, honestly, had I known... Like, I would be stuck with the moving fee no matter, or the cancellation fee no matter what. I would have just canceled months ago. I'm so, like, fed up with this particular company.
That.
But, yeah.
I hate them all.
They're the worst.
I really do.
They've gotten better. There was a time where if you called and said, hey, my service, something's wrong, either they wouldn't call you back or they'd go, we'll send a guy out in a week or something. Now, like, the service provider I have now, is really, we've never gone more than a day. Like, there have been times, I don't know if you have this situation with your satellite or your cable, but I've got three different controllers and every button needs to be pressed a certain way or you just get fuzz. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's switchers and stuff. And people always go, well, you should get a universal remote. For some reason, we've tried it and it just doesn't work.
I hate our universal remote more than anything.
It's
and then
a headache, isn't
you
it?
Put the other remotes away because you have the universal remote. And we got a new cable box because ours was just so old and we had a technician come out. And then, of course, the remote doesn't work with the new box, even though he says, oh, all of our boxes. So then you lose the originals. I hate all of it.
Yeah. It's a headache. But now the service provider we have now, when you call up and go, because if you hit one wrong button, you know how sometimes the room is dark and you're not focused and you go, I think it's that button. And then all of a sudden you just lose everything. It's all snow. They're so patient. I mean.
Do you call everyone? You go to the store to learn how to use your phone. You call, I can't turn on my TV. How do I brush my teeth, dentist?
I stay in pretty close contact with almost everybody
Bill,
in the universe.
Bill, who would know better than the dentist how to brush your teeth?
That's so true.
Right?
They do that for a living. That's what they're...
go right to the experts.
Right.
There's a picture hanging up at the phone store and the cable store. If this guy calls or if this number calls...
Do not take the call.
Jeez. Right.
Do not take the call.
I'm saying they're nice, but it's way too expensive.
It is expensive. There's no doubt. Although you pay almost double what I pay, and I can't figure out why.
Because I'm an idiot. I call them and say, could you charge me more? Cool!
Ours is about $100 a month, but you've said you pay over $200 a month, don't you?
Your cable bill is $100 a month?
Yeah.
Well, that includes internet for us, and our internet is like $89 or something because we got the top speed one. And
yours is an internet bill?
Yeah, it is.
It's internet and TV services,
right, but
landline,
the
which we just canceled.
Yeah, it's all those things. But the breakdown comes to our satellite costs us around 100. I can't remember if it's just over or just under. But that's not bad. But you've said you pay over 200 a month for that stuff.
I do, although Jimmy Mack claims it's not, but it is. I'm trying to log on to my thing to see what it is. I just hate it. I hate to pay. There are just so many options. Kevin, you went through that little sheet, and we'll talk to Bridget Carey later from CNET. They put together, I don't know if it was CNET, actually it was somewhere else, where you could mix and match things like Hulu and
I sent that right
Netflix.
Home.
Did you?
Yeah, it's a great chart. Mm-hmm. I remember when she was on with you, and I looked it up while you guys were talking.
Did you do anything about it?
We're probably within the next 7 or 8 years, we're going to do something about it.
Once your contract's up.
That's so true, because I'm like, Kevin, you said, I am totally all over this. And I said, will you send it to me? And then I sent it to Jim, and no one's
Nothing's
done anything.
Happened. But there's always...
Oh, no, we're going to do something.
There's always something major missing. Like, it's either your local TV coverage, or it's your local sporting events. Anytime I've looked into it, something that I want to see.
Kevin, wasn't there local stuff in sporting?
See, it's a question mark, because that's what I want. I want to be able to watch basically like Game of Thrones and then the Bears and the Hawks. That's it.
That's it on TV.
That's really all I really care about. And I don't know, like, you can get certain Comcast channels, like for the Blackhawks, Comcast, but I don't know if it's going to be local to where I'm living I don't know how the specifics of that work out.
All right, let's do this. We will take a break. Kevin, will you still be here after the break?
Yeah, I should be here.
All right, just making sure. A quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
All right, we were talking about canceling your, it's not even cable anymore. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's either cable or satellite. Those are your options, right?
I don't know.
Do you know anybody that just has regular standard TV and doesn't have either cable or satellite? I don't know anybody
like
that. Yeah,
a lot of people get that HD antenna that they put on top of their roof and you can pick up things through the satellites out there.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know how to do any of that.
It should be easier. I have a feeling at some point soon it'll be a lot easier.
I think new TVs just have it internally built now, I think.
I will say that, yeah. I must say...
Wendy Grimley.
I just screwed myself up. We recently bought a new TV for our finished basement because you had to have a TV down there. I'm sorry. It was really getting old just staring at a wall.
Sure.
And the new TVs, first of all, have come down in price so tremendously. And if you get a smart TV, and we have Hulu, we have Netflix, it's a smart TV, so you can just pull them up there.
Yeah.
We didn't have cable connected down in the basement for quite some time, and still we were able to get by. TV habits have changed. Now you can find things on Netflix or Hulu and watch it when you want.
Right.
When we were growing up, you pretty much, it was appointment television. If something was on, maybe you had a VCR, but you kind of had to watch it as it happened.
But with yours, and I don't know if they're all like that or if it's just at my house, just to get to that part of the TV that gives you the different options of Hulu or Netflix, or ours also has a there's a third one.
Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah, maybe Amazon.
And the YouTube.
All that, right.
Sling TV we pay for, too.
But just to get to that, that's one controller. And then if we want to watch a movie on DVD, we have to pull out another controller.
Right,
if
that's
I just want
everybody.
To watch, all right, so I have three controllers that need to be around at all times. And if there's one button that's not in order on any of them, I don't get to see anything.
I can't believe you can get a picture on your TV. I'm not shocking. Making fun of you, but I'm kind of a gadget bitch, and I know if something's wrong, the setting, put it on satellite or Blu-ray or whatever.
Well, if you want to watch a DVD first, you have to go back to 1995.
I still have...
There are DVDs that you can watch.
In our living room, I've got a glass case that has like...
Bragger.
100... It's not real glass. It's plexiglass. I've got like my 100 favorite movies of all time and then a bunch of TV shows and stuff. And I still like, you know, once or twice a week throw in a DVD.
Dylan is 14 years old and he's really the technological whiz at home. I'll tell you that right now. Between connecting and reconnecting his Switch, his Xbox, sometimes he moves it to a different TV. He can do things in 1 second. And he recently went in the crawl space and found all these VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there was a VCR. So he hooked it up and he's been watching Back to the Future, Pee-wee's Playhouse.
They're better on VHS.
Well, they're kind of shaky as they get older.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
See, we didn't know that when we first started buying that stuff, is that the emulsion on it just kind of flakes off at some point.
But it's kind of fun, and everybody has the three remote issue. That's why they make the universal remotes.
But if it does what it's supposed to do, the universal remote should make all those other ones obsolete. It won't for us.
I've never had a universal remote where I could do everything I could.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Really? We had one until we got the new cable box, and then it doesn't work.
Because why?
Because
the new technology
all you have to do, and it's funny, when you get things now, a lot of things do not come with a big pamphlet of how to do it.
You have to download the instructions.
I know. Seriously. So all I have to really do is go look and look at the model number of the new unit we got and just plug that in and bing, bang, boom, it's done.
But
who wants to do all the work?
That's too long.
You put Velcro on the back of your VCRs or on your remotes and you stick them to the couch.
Yeah.
We don't do that, but maybe you should.
It would be easier.
You're so cute. You're like, Wendy, we have three separate remotes.
It's just frustrating because I keep thinking if there is such a thing as a universal remote, it should do exactly that. But so then when we used to have one, we had four remotes and, you know, couldn't get it to work on any of them. So now we're just down to three because we got rid of the universal remote.
I'm just watching on my phone from now on.
Yep.
I'm done with everything. I'm just going to listen to the radio.
I hire actors to come to our house and perform whatever episodes. Yeah, we've been doing it that way. It's a lot easier.
To share in that.
It's a lot
easier.
Charge
admission.
Yeah, I'll start doing that. I'll start charging admission. All right, here's the game plan. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, a lot more on the show. Tamara Manassa joins us later on. We've had her on in the past. How would you best describe what she does, Wendy? I'm trying to think of what the best description for what Tamara does is.
She is one of the founders of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings. She does kind of a neighborhood watch. She's an activist. That's how I would describe
her. Yeah, that'd be perfect. So she'll be on later on. Also, Bridget Carey from CNET. So stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy with you on WGN Radio. We're at 312-981-7200. Wendy, do you remember, now this is about, a year and a half ago, somebody found a photograph that was taken in the 1940s, and it was a street scene. I don't remember what city it took place in, but you had people just kind of hustling and bustling down a city street, and one of the people, and keep in mind, this was sometime in the 1940s, I can't remember if it was a guy or a girl, but somebody in the photograph was holding up what appeared to be like a cell phone in the old photograph.
Yes, and didn't we investigate that or check Snopes or something, and it was some kind of factory
hearing
worker?
Hearing device. Didn't they say it was a hearing device?
You said that.
Oh, I did?
It's Snopes, like I'm having deja vu.
It's the same thing. What's the difference?
You said it was a hearing device. Somebody, I think we looked it up on Snopes, and they said that it was kind of a walkie-talkie type thing.
Oh, right. You're right. That's what it was.
See,
like
it's
a
coming back to you.
Thing. Yeah.
But it did resemble a cell phone, and everybody was like, that's fake.
How could that be? Is it a time traveler? People wondered. Well, now, guess what? It has happened again, but this time with a painting. It says an 80-year-old painting.
The Mona Lisa had a cell phone in her hand?
A virtual reality headset. An 80-year-old painting has taken the internet by storm. That's the best thing with the internet, when something takes it by storm. By appearing to show a Native American man using an iPhone. Now, keep in mind, this is a painting from 80 years ago. The painting, called Mr. Pinchon and the Settling of Springfield, was committed to canvas back in 1937 by an Italian painter named Umberto Romano.
I like when you speak like that.
Umberto Romano. It depicts two Native American tribes and British settlers meeting for the first time in Massachusetts. It took place somewhere around the year 1630, which I think, if you look at Snopes, was a year that they did not have cell phones. Cell phones were not invented until the 1650s, not 1630. Neither then nor in the 1930s were smartphones around, we know, but that's exactly what one of the several men depicted in the artwork seems to be gazing at. I don't know if you've seen this photograph.
I have.
But it's uncanny because he's not only does it look like he's holding a cell phone or a smartphone, but he's looking at it the way you would a cell. He's like checking like stock prices or something.
Looking at the score from the Indians game last night.
Right. I just bought 100 shares of Krispy Kreme. How am I doing? Oh, look at that. Up an eighth of a point. Another man who's tied to a pole appears to be leaning over to try to get a look at the Native Americans' latest snapshots. The anomaly was noticed 2 days ago by Brian Anderson, who writes for an online magazine called Vice. It's not clear exactly who this man is, but he might as well be popping off a selfie or thumbing through his newsfeed, Anderson wrote. He seems to gaze into the handheld device in such a way that renders all too familiar today. That's what I was saying. He's holding it exactly like you would a smartphone and looking at it like as, you know, as if to go, oh, yeah, look at that. Look at that. Like it's no big deal.
It does look like that.
It's as if he's just read a bad tweet or he's recoiling from a Trump-related push notification from the Times, they say. He would almost look unrecognizable if only he and the world around him existed at any point in the past decade. So what they're saying essentially is, now, if this was a painting of something now, people would just assume, oh, yeah, he's got a smartphone. What's the big deal? But this was 1630.
Well, so how do we...
I don't know how you explain this.
It's not on Snopes right
now.
It's
too new. We've scooped the competition.
It does look like a cell phone, but it obviously isn't.
No, of course it can't be. But what could it have possibly been? Like with the other one, there were all kinds of theories of what the guy or the woman was walking down the street. With this, it doesn't look like anything else. There was one of the websites I visited said like a gemstone. But that's not a gemstone. It's flat.
And square and
it's
black,
right.
Like a cell phone,
it
like an
iPhone.
Not,
it doesn't look like a gemstone.
Oh, boy.
Solve it, Miss Marple.
Who's Miss Marple?
A solver.
A problem solver?
Yeah.
Or a puzzle solver, because they're two different things.
She's like an older Hardy Boys.
They're saying it's an iron blade.
No, it's not an iron blade. Unless that's what they called smartphones back then. Did Motorola make an iron blade back in the 1630s that I'm not aware of?
Before the razor.
Right. That was their precursor to the razor. We'll just try this out with Native Americans, and if they like it, we'll sell it to everybody.
It sure does look like an iPhone.
It's uncanny, and he's holding it in such a way. Now, you would almost expect those around him to be more confused by it, but it's just like business as usual. Everybody's just going about their business. Because if everything was right, somebody would go, hey, visitor from the future, where'd you get that? Did you have to sign a one-year deal?
Can you hear me now?
Right. That guy Paul should be standing next to him.
Oh, he bugs me. We need to solve this by the end of the show today.
It's too confusing, isn't it? I don't know how this could be.
All right. Well, Mike has a theory. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How y'all doing?
Mike, we're confused.
A mirror in a black leather for a change.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
What is it?
It's a mirror in a black leather case.
Why would he have a mirror?
The settlers gave it to my ancestors.
They gave out mirrors?
He wanted to see if he had any maize in his teeth.
Trinkets.
That's true.
I mean, what did they buy Massachusetts for? A pearl or something like that?
Right, it was a pretty... Yeah, they took advantage. Wow, so you just think that's all it was a little piece of a mirror.
Yeah, and I've been up since 10:30 last night thinking about that.
All right, well, sorry, we didn't want to do that to you, but thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Good day.
Thanks.
Thank you. It could, like, a compact.
Did they have those in the 1630? I mean, I guess mirrors were certainly possible, more than possible, but... Did they just have handheld ones like that?
Well, why not?
Yeah?
I don't have the answer.
I'm not 100% sure that's accurate.
Well, maybe Mary knows. Hi, Mary.
Yeah.
Mary, what could this be?
Oh, I have the absolute definitive answer. Well, you know, according to 2001, Space Odyssey and just other things, the aliens actually taught the humans things, and they gave them a cell phone.
That makes sense. All right, I'll accept that.
I mean, it's obvious, but when my family came over in 1650, the internet had problems, and they were no longer used.
Oh, all right. So
Thank you for solving that, Mary.
That makes perfect sense.
Somebody says they didn't have cameras in 1630, so how can this picture be valid anyway? It's a painting.
Well, it's a painting, yeah.
But a painting of an alleged picture. Someone says perhaps it's a photograph in a frame of his wife or something. A small book, a notebook.
Did they have that in the 1630s? Did they have photographic capabilities?
No, that's what somebody's saying.
It's a painting in a frame, not a picture, right?
Right,
it's
but
a painting, but it depicts the era of the 1630s. You know what I mean?
Right, but if he was, so it wouldn't be a picture in a picture frame, because did we have pictures then?
I don't think we had pictures. No, we didn't have pictures then.
A lot of people saying it's a mirror, Bill.
A mirror I can almost accept, but it seems out of place that a guy would just be sitting there looking at a mirror. During this historic event.
You can no longer bring things up unless you have the solution to them.
I don't have the solution.
This is going to bug me for the
rest
of the day.
I wish I had the solution. I don't. All right, we'll take a quick break. Bridget Carey's going to join us from CNET. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And on a Tech Tuesday, we say hello to Bridget Carey, a senior editor at CNET, CNET.com. Bridget, Bill has been wowed. Let me just say that.
Yeah?
Yeah, listen to this, Bridget. They had... the Wizard Con, you know, Wizard World.
Bridget, you've been talking, by the way, about this thing he's going to tell you for years, and just listen.
I didn't know how great it was, but they roped me into trying a virtual reality headset. I didn't want to do it, but they said, "Come on, just try. You'll love this." So they had a scenario where there was a roller coaster that was built into the cityscape. So you went up to the top of a building. And then you got on a roller coaster, and it went all around a city, like from building top to building top. and I was holding on to the chair that I was sitting in because I was afraid I might fall.
You tried virtual reality.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
You'll always remember your first time.
Yeah. I like it way better than real life. I want to live in there.
Yeah, this is something that, you know, you're seeing more at these little conventions, and even at Disney World, they're going to bring virtual reality outside of the park in both California and Florida, to like a little Star Wars experience, you know. So it's going to be exposed to more and more people. Movie theaters or like really big ones, they're starting to add little entertainment areas where the arcade was. So you can sit down for like 5 minutes and watch a little VR thing that's tied to a movie. So everyone's going to have their little roller coaster moments more and more.
Now, this is going to get more involved and more elaborate and probably cheaper as it comes along, correct?
Yeah, and today Google just announced that Android phones are getting something that's like virtual reality. It's called augmented reality. It's not a goggle you put on your face. This is more like using your phone's camera, pointing it out into, you know, your office or a park. And on your phone, it looks like a little cartoon character is jumping in the middle of everything. So it's like blurring reality with you know, what's not real. Kind of like how Pokemon Go worked, you know, where it looked like a Pikachu was running around in front of you. And Google just announced that normal Android phones will be able to, you know, be better at this. One practical, you know, implementation is to say, I want to buy that coffee table from IKEA. How's it going to fit in my room? Let me open up the app, point my phone's camera at my living room, and I see a virtual version of that piece of furniture floating there. And what the mechanics of it is that they're programming it so the computer can understand, okay, that's your couch. We're going to see about how big that is. And it's doing the calculations to kind of make it look real. Based on other real things in the room. And that's where the magic of the tech is, right? Because you can just point a phone at anything and put a cartoon in there. But how is it at knowing the space and how big it should be in that space?
See, now that is really good, because I think Wayfair and AllModern, they're all kind of the same company. And if you look at, say, a dining room table, you can take that picture of the dining room table and hold your phone up, and it'll be a reality photo of what's going on in your living room right now. So you can stretch it and see if it would look good style-wise. But measurement-wise, that doesn't help you.
And how do you make something look like it's really sitting on a table and with the shadows, and it's really like walking onto the edge? That's the hard part of all this tech. Having a computer understand, okay, that's the edge of a table that I have my little video game character running around on, and how does it not fall off, you know? So Google kind of released a little bit of information saying a few phones are going to have this. Apple at its last event was showing off how it's doing this too. I think we're all going to start seeing this more in, like, silly photos we share on all these social media apps. But, yes, the practical things that also with furniture and maybe advice on how to do home improvement, that's going to be, you know, real useful.
But, Bridget, the big difference, though, is I get it on the phone, but when you have this headset on, you're totally immersed in this universe where no matter which way you look, up, down, left, right, spin around, there's something going on everywhere. It was very disconcerting. Like I said, I was holding the chair. The girl next to me asked if she could stand up during this. She was watching some other virtual reality scenario, and they go, oh, no, you got to stay seated because you could fall down and hurt yourself.
Yeah, you'll lose your balance probably very easily.
You're also tethered, right? Because some headsets are working on like putting backpacks on you so you can really walk around. There's actually the thing I mentioned about Disney is that it's not going to be something you sit down at. What they're doing is building. This is a new thing actually that a couple companies are working on. Building areas, like you walk into a room and that room is built to correspond to everything in that virtual world. So if there is a ledge, you can feel with your foot, you know, oh my gosh, it really is a ledge there. If there's a bar, like you're walking on stairs, you can feel that there's actually stairs and a handrail to walk across. So they're actually building this blur of a, like, oh, is that a wall in front of me? And you stick your hand out, and you really do touch and feel the wall.
Is it like the holodeck on Star Trek The Next Generation?
Well, certainly there's limitations, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you could just want an ice cream sundae and boom, there it is. What was that thing? The food generator?
Had that.
Yeah. Instant hot gray tea. It's kind of taken it to the next level. You were sitting in a chair, you couldn't move. What if you could move around? You'd have to build a room that matched that virtual space. And they do have roller coasters that you actually ride in and put a headset on. I would just yak. I couldn't handle that. but certainly the room could have a drawer that you open and you physically are touching it with your hand while virtually in your eyesight you're seeing something else be opened. That would be even more fooling the brain, you know, and you have to like really recoup yourself after you're done with that.
I would imagine.
What worries me so much about this is you're already seeing people with their face in their phones. Just this morning, somebody crossed the intersection right in front of me, didn't even look, had the headphones on and was looking at his phone at the time. I mean, what if people start driving with virtual reality headsets on? What if they're walking down the street? You know somebody's going to break the rules.
You're having self-driving cars. What's to say you're having entertainment in the back seat that's eventually virtual? Because who cares, right? If you don't have a self-driving car, you don't need to drive. I think it is an interesting thing you're bringing up. People, for the most part so far, are just tapping into short amounts of time because it is hard on the dizzy factor, you know, to last for many, many hours inside virtual reality. But, you know, the internet used to be an escape for people, and now it's the real world that's an escape from the internet. So yeah, I think you're onto something. You know, as this tech gets better, we'll be spending more and more time entertained by it, and, you know, maybe not wanting to go out to the mall, but just stay at home and, you know, be entertained by virtual
reality. No one is going to go out, because you have mentioned it before that there are like virtual reality, like girlfriends and such. Bill, you kind of rolled your eyes at it, but after seeing how real virtual reality is, you could see where somebody who doesn't have a girlfriend might have a virtual one. No one's ever going to leave the house ever again.
That's what Facebook's doing. They're making Facebook for the virtual reality world, where you could just see like cartoon versions of your friends all sitting around and talking.
My friends are cartoons, so it doesn't apply to me.
You're not kidding. All right, and real quickly before we let you go, and you can find all the stuff at CNET.com, YouTube is making some changes at the way we watch video. Go ahead with that.
Oh yeah, you're going to see some updates to the app and on the website. Where they make it so if you hold your phone vertically and you watch a video, a lot of times we're taking more video holding our phones up and down vertically, and it kind of looks bad when you watch it, but they're going to make it full screen. So they're kind of changing with the fact that we are producing so much video that's not horizontal. You're seeing that a lot of app makers are finding ways to make it look good on your phone, even though you really should be holding it horizontally.
You always hold it horizontally when taking a video. Although, is it Snapchat? One of them won't let you do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Snapchat, if you do it, you got to turn your head sideways, right? So they're trying to, they realize people quickly want to hold their phone up and down. And, you know, I got a kid, she's running around. I'm just trying to capture that moment as fast as I can. Most of my videos are all vertical. And so it's up to these app makers to go, all right, well, if we're all holding it vertical, maybe videos kind of change a little bit with that, and they make them look good as best they can. Sometimes you see more square videos because of that, where they'll just make it square, so no matter which way you look, it looks the same.
Bridget, real quick, I know we're out of time, but I'm just curious. I saw an ad for a telephone where you press a button and your phone becomes a projector. You can project whatever
videos. The new Motorola, I saw that.
The new Motorola. Is that already available, and is that expensive? Is that necessary, I guess, would be a better question?
Oh, necessary. A very funny word gadget land. I don't know if it's out. You caught me by surprise there. But I will say that a lot of the phones are coming with different tricks like this to get your attention.
Yeah.
Got your attention.
Yeah, I was impressed by it. I haven't seen it live, but the commercial makes it look amazing.
And we loved our Motorola flip phone. I used it.
Yeah.
Motorola made a good product. The Razr was pretty streamlined and cool at the time, so
yeah.
I don't know.
They have a whole new lineup that is actually pretty affordable and does all the same stuff as the modern phone, so it's very compelling what they got out lately.
Excellent. Great. Well, thanks, Bridget. We appreciate it. Hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, you too.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. Go to CNET.com. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Bill, about 3 years ago, maybe a little longer, we were talking about a woman who said, you know what? I'm going to help make our neighborhood a little more safe. So she got out in her lawn chair and she became the mother to everyone in her neighborhood. She's the founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings, and she is back with us today, Tamar Manassa. Hi, Tamar.
Hi, Tamar.
Hello, Bill. Hello, Wendy. Hello, Chicago.
I made the mistake of saying or asking you how your summer has been. And then you made a series of scary noises.
It wasn't scary. I was just telling you what you asked the question and it got an answer.
It was hard summer.
It's been Groundhog Day.
Oh,
it's
no.
been 8 years.
Oh,
this
no.
summer has been 8 years long. That's how long that summer's
how
been.
How come? What's gone wrong?
You know what? It's not necessarily what's gone wrong. It's actually just so much new stuff.
Yeah.
We moved from our space across the street. We were in a space that was roughly maybe 10 feet by 20 feet, maybe. Yeah.
And give the general location of this
We're at
area.
The corner of 75th and Stewart. And we moved from a space maybe 10 by 20. And we served at least 100 people dinner every night mm-hmm. in that kind of a space. We played with the kids. We served dinner. We had community time. We did all of that in that space. Now, this summer, we have moved across the street into a vacant lot, a double lot. So it's 10 times the size of what we had before. So we've been working on this huge construction project because what we'll be doing actually with the area is it's not just going to be a play lot. It's going to be a pop-up community center. Mm. And we're looking to build more of these across the city and more of them across the country in neighborhoods that look like Inglewood and Roseland and mm-hmm. Lawndale and places like that. Because they actually do reduce violence
mm-hmm.
and they're a lot cheaper than hiring more police officers. So if you can take a vacant lot and they're called pocket parks. If you can take a vacant lot and you can turn it in to a pop-up community center, a place where kids can come and play and where the community can come and interact safely, you can reduce violence. We just had the Wall Street Journal come to the block the other day because they recognized that we'd actually reduce violence in that census tract. And they wanted to know, how did we do it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're only one woman. You handle the 75th and Stewart, the mm-hmm. area surrounding there. Why isn't someone following your lead and doing that in their neighborhood?
Because apparently, Wendy, I'm Superwoman.
You 100% are.
Apparently, that's what it is.
But it takes Superwoman to do this,
effort.
Doesn't it?
It is, you know, anybody can do it, and it's a commitment. And this is not about me saving Chicago or saving the world. This is about me showing Chicago how we can save ourselves and showing the world how we can save ourselves. This is just an example of what we all can do. We can all do this. I mean, like, literally, I sit on a corner and I hang out with my friends. And I stop people from getting killed mm-hmm. just by cooking and hanging out with my friends and caring about a kid and maybe disciplining them every once in a while. This actually saves lives. It doesn't get easier than that. It just takes time and commitment. Just commit your time.
Yeah,
that's
but
it.
You commit all of your time. It seems 24/7 with you.
It is.
365 a year.
It is. I do not have a social life and I have not seen Jeopardy all summer. And it's driving me nuts. It really is. It's really
you can binge watch them. When the summer's over, you can sit down and watch
Jeopardy's not the same in
no.
the middle of the night. It's
no.
not. It's just
you
not.
You need it in the middle of the day.
No, and it's dark. It's not. It has to be watched at 3:30 like God intended.
Right.
But it's kind of like it takes that, especially when you see the progress that you're making.
And talk about that. You started this how long
in
ago?
In 2015. That was our first year out. And since 2015, we have not had a shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Not one, not had a shooting. So in this neighborhood, we saw the sharpest decline in that area. So what we do in that census tract does not necessarily reflect the rest of Inglewood. So we've seen a decline in gun violence, but at the same time, we've actually saw the neighborhood school, their scores have actually went up. So the
what's
neighborhood
the cause and
school,
effect on that? Is it because the kids just aren't worried about the dangers of the area? They're more
and
focused
because
on,
more people care about the kids.
That's it, isn't that, it?
I mean, because, bottom line, we all want to be cared about. We want to feel like we belong. We want to feel that someone gives a crap about us.
Definitely. I want to see good grades.
Mm-hmm.
I reward good behavior. I reward good grades.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have fun. We're going to do fun things. I care about you succeeding. I care about that. I don't know who else cares. I'm not going to comment on parents at all. All I can comment on is what I do mm-hmm. and what we do. And we put a premium on education. We encourage good behavior. We encourage helping. We encourage kids to help clean up and help serve food. And we encourage all of these things. Yeah. So these are things that carry over through the school year. So I'm really proud to see that in an area where I haven't heard of any major, you know, gun buybacks or givebacks in that neighborhood. So we can assume that everybody has guns, but no one's using them.
Mm-hmm.
No one's using them.
Think back, and Bill, when we were growing up, we grew up in the suburbs, predominantly white suburbs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we all played with the kids on the block. We all knew our neighbors. And there came a point in time, even in affluent areas, where no one knows their neighbors. Isn't a part of community what helps bring
Absolutely.
Everyone together? You want to take care of
Absolutely.
Your areas.
And this is not just about, I've had mothers come from Skokie. Mothers from Northbrook, moms from, I mean, Winnetka, from all sorts of places, just to come sit on a corner in Englewood with me. Because it's not just about preventing violence, it's about building community. And anywhere you live, you need community. You want to know your neighbors. You should know your neighbors' kids. You want it in a place where people know their neighbors. Violence and crime can't happen as much because everybody knows everybody. And you know who doesn't fit. You know when there's a strange car. You know when, you know,
That's
your
true.
Neighbor's out of town and the lights are on. Why is this happening? It never hurts to build community.
There are gangs by you, correct?
I think I'm the gang.
You're the gang.
Yeah.
But there
the
was when you
there
first
was.
Start out.
All right. So 2 years ago, there were gangs. So what was there a dialogue between them and you? What was there an understanding?
There's an understanding. Hey, I'm the mom.
Yeah.
There is an understanding. You know, you got to look at what gangs were originally created for. It was a surrogate family, right?
Yeah.
So now, I mean, this surrogate family, that surrogate family could have potentially gotten you murdered.
Yeah.
This one gets you fed. It gets you hugged a lot.
Yeah.
It gets you help when you need it. It gets you into GED programs. It helps you find jobs. It helps you find, you know, job training. That's what this family does. That's what this gang for good does.
Yeah.
So whatever the gangs were before, I don't know. Everybody is a member of the gang for good now.
Yeah.
We're all in the same gang now. So everywhere you go to 75th and Stewart, anybody's walking around with a men on patrol or moms on patrol t-shirt because we're all in the same gang because we all want the same thing, a better community for our children. Mm-hmm. That's what we want.
All right. What if you have a kid whose father was a gang member and that's all this kid knows? That's all he's been around. They have decent money because mm-hmm. that's how you make your money. How does that kid not fall into the gang mentality?
We don't allow it. Love there. You can fall into a gang mentality, our gang mentality. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to school. You're going to play sports. You're going to be a kid. You are going to get the same thing that every other American teenager gets. You're going to get an opportunity. We're going to guarantee that you're going to get an opportunity. You are going to get to go to high school. You're going to play some football or baseball or whatever you're good at. You're going to go on prom. You're going to graduate. You're going to go to college. You're going to do something because that's really what we want you to do. Because that's the only option for you. Because the other life, even parents who may have once upon a time been involved in drugs or whatever, they don't want that for their children.
They sure don't.
Every parent wants something more for their children than what they had. Everybody wants that. No drug dealer wants their kids to grow up to be a drug dealer because they know how hard that is. And that's not the life we want for our kids. And so they'll do whatever they can, people who are involved in that, to encourage what we do and to encourage their children to be involved in what we do. So it really works out well, and it's not something that's impossible to replicate.
Tamar Manasseh is here, founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings, the
website.
She
makes it sound so easy.
Well,
it
but
is.
It is. Well, it is.
It actually
but it's,
is.
I know it's draining you. I can tell it's draining you, but is there anything more worthwhile than
I'm
this?
I'm just like any other mother at the end of the summer. I yeah. want them to go back to school. We all want that as mothers.
That is
we
the best day of my
comment.
Life when the kids go
That's
back to school.
That's the real Mother's Day, the first day of school for our
sure.
kids.
OnTheBlock.org is the website you want to visit if you want to call in with a question or comment. 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We have the founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings, Tamar Manasseh, in the studio with us. You are celebrating a wonderful occasion, 3 years of no shootings around 75th and Stewart, and you're having a party.
Absolutely. We're having a great big party.
You should.
Yeah, a block party, a blocking gun violence party. That's mm-hmm. what we're having. We're having a party where, I mean, we're giving out school uniforms. We're giving out backpacks and school supplies. We're doing haircuts. There will be horses and a mechanical bull. Who can miss a party like that?
Because the kids love Urban Cowboy.
They do.
Find me a child that doesn't enjoy Urban Cowboy.
You have no idea how much kids love that. Yep. They love it.
We talked about, she is a superwoman. She really is. Tamar Manassa. And she creates a community in her neighborhood. Diane, you're familiar with this area?
Yes, I am. I was just telling the gentleman that answered the phone. I grew up at 7237, so it's really right down the street from where this lady is today. Oh, my God. And I go onto the Internet and I look up our neighborhood. And, well, our where our house was now is a prairie. There is not a house. I have no idea what happened to it. And like I say, I moved out in my early, well, I was like 20 years old, I think, when we all moved out. But I just, it's almost brought tears to my eyes because I was so happy that, you know, here's somebody, such a nice, nice lady that lives in my old neighborhood.
And who's saving it.
And it's full of nice yeah. ladies, actually.
Oh, and I'm sure it is, but it's—I can't tell you how excited I got when I heard you on the phone. I lived there, you know.
Well, thank you, Diane. Tamar is taking very good care of it, and some people have texted us, great interview, great woman, mask, never heard of it before, what can I do to help? Another text, does your guest get donations of food, money, books, sports equipment, etc.? How would someone or some company contribute to your most impressive guest and her successful endeavors?
Hey, we take all of the above, plus hugs, lots of hugs. Come down and hug somebody if you want to. But you can donate at ontheblock.org, and you can also reach us on Facebook, Chicago. It's Mothers Against Senseless Killing Chicago, I believe. I'm not the most tech savvy, so I think that's us.
That should be you.
I think that
should be you.
Yeah.
I hate to bring this aspect of it up, but we've talked about this in the past, and it baffles me every time. You would think if you were the city or if you were law enforcement, you'd hear your story and you'd say, boy, this is great. It makes our job easier. It makes everybody's life easier. But it's not always that way, is it?
No.
No?
It's never really actually that way. No, it's not. The alderman of the 6th Ward and I, we've actually started trying to work together a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that we're working things out. So, mm-hmm. you know, he's kind of coming on board and he's, you know, being a lot more friendly.
But what could the resistance possibly be?
You know what? Chicago is such a political city. It really is. Everything is all about politics in this city. And I think sometimes people have to understand, I don't want your job. Yeah. Everybody doesn't want to be a politician. Some people just want to do good things.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's all I want to do. I don't want your office. I don't want to be an elected official.
But you'd be so good at it.
No, my mother wouldn't be proud, though. But no, I want to do as much good as I can.
So you think their fear is that you're coming in and you're making the streets safer. You think that there are politicians that go, uh-oh, she's gunning for my job. We can't have that.
I can't be a threat. I can't be a threat. And the thing is, I should be the least of anyone's concerns. There are so many threats coming from everywhere else. You don't need to worry about me.
But doesn't that make their job look successful if the area that they're the alderman is growing and flourishing? Doesn't that make them look like a success story?
Hey, man, you should call them and ask them that. I don't see where it makes them look bad. If you have a ward that has actually seen a decrease in gun violence when everyone else is seeing an uptick, how could this possibly be a bad thing for you? Everybody doesn't see it that way. I mean, like, honestly, I think that in a place, I think the city should really be paying attention to what we're doing mm-hmm. in that area instead of the mayor saying, oh, she's making a huge difference on her block. Mm-hmm. A, it's not my block. I don't even live there. B, it's a 1 square mile radius. And to tell you the truth, it would actually be further reaching if the gang territories didn't change. So if you could replicate this in other places, and if you could give it, you can incentivize it some kind of way, and you can make this a good thing for other people in neighborhoods like these, you could really change this city. But that's not the conversation that we're having.
What was your breaking point? What was all of a sudden you said, you know what? I got to do something about the violence in our neighborhood. I got to make our neighborhood a neighborhood again. What was your breaking point and why did you start this whole thing?
A mother was murdered. A mother was murdered. And when a mother got murdered, and I mean, we were almost the same age and she had children and she was doing something exactly like what I would do. I would break up a fight. what's wrong with breaking up a fight? I mean, if you see two people fighting, they're young people, break it up if you can. And just while she was breaking up this fight, somebody came by and shot her and killed her. Just a few years before that, a 9-year-old had been murdered in broad daylight, giving her dog a bath on the same block. So, I mean, and countless men had been murdered. So who is safe in this, on this block? Who's safe in this place? Everybody has to have a breaking point. Everyone has to have a boiling point, a point where they say enough is enough. And I don't think enough of us have gotten there. I don't know how many babies we have to see die, how many tiny caskets we have to see for us to reach the point where we say no more. Mm-hmm. Enough is enough. We're done with this. That was my breaking point.
No one wants to take on what you have taken on, though. It seems, I know you have a lot of help, but really you're behind this so much. It just makes sense to me that 5 mothers, 10 mothers of the neighborhood would start their own little sanction of this.
I think it's going to catch on. I do. I really do. I think it's going to catch on because it's not as dangerous as people think it is. We've been out 3 years and none of us have been murdered. None of us
have been
shot. Were
you scared at first? That first time you were out?
I was not scared.
You're a special human being, though.
I was not scared. I don't come from a place where parents fear kids. Like, that wasn't how I was raised. There were no adults in my house that were afraid of kids. It was always the other way around.
Yeah.
We learned fear first. Love came later. But I never was afraid of a kid because the thing is, if you are a black mother, everyone has looked at your son, no matter if you were Claire Huxtable, no matter how well you tried to raise him and thought that your son was a gangbanger. We can't be those people to each other. We have to look at each other's kids and say, no, that's a good kid. That's a good kid. He's a good kid. I'm not going to look at him and say he's a gangbanger. I'm going to look at him like he's my son, and I'm going to say he's a good kid. He deserves my help, so I'm going to help him. That's how I see it. So I never said, oh, these kids are dangerous. No, they're just kids, and I have two of them myself, so no, I'm good.
They are just kids.
They're just kids.
Tamar, you're incredibly inspiring.
Thank you.
You really are.
Thank you.
I can't imagine why there's ever been any opposition to anything you're doing because, honestly, as you said at the very beginning and you've told us in the past, you just want people to get along and to live. And there's
to live. Quibble That's with all them. I want. For people to just live.
Yeah.
Just live.
This all started with a hug. I remember when we first had you on and you just said, you know, you told some guy to pull up his pants and come here and give me a hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it started.
I hug you while your pants are down. Come hug me. Yep. I know you want to hug me. I can see you want a hug. Come get a hug.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're amazing. Tamar Manasseh. Mm-hmm. Tamar Manasseh. She is founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings. So many people are texting. Please repeat the website again. How do we help? What do we do?
ontheblock.org. And everyone is invited to our block party. It's Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., 7500 South Stewart Block. Come out and hang out with us. Get on the mechanical bull. You will have to sign a waiver. Come out and have fun with us. It's going to be a great time.
Thank you, Tamar.
Oh, wait, one more thing.
Yes.
Go Cubs, go.
Yes. That's the best part.
Go Cubs.
I wasn't going to lose it until just now.
I know.
No, I'm losing it. Tamar, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a quick break. Some news is next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's 720 WGN. Of course, everything going on in Texas right now, just watching horrific videos. I mean, really, it's heartbreaking.
Sure.
And there was a story that came up in the news that, how would you best describe Joel Osteen?
He is a televangelist.
That would be a good description.
Yeah.
He has this church in Houston, his Lakewood Church. And just after Hurricane Harvey made landfall,
if I can add to that, he may be our generation's most successful televangelist. I'm trying to think if anyone comes close to him right now, and no names come to mind. I mean, there's guys like Pat Robertson who've been doing it for years, but I think Joel Osteen right now is probably at the top of the heap when it comes to your televangelists.
Did the Bakers, I mean, I know they got rid of their money, Tammy Faye, and they had money, and
Jim
then
Baker.
How are you characterizing successful?
In terms of just...
rich.
Yeah, I hate to say, but yeah, in terms, yeah.
Well, when Hurricane Harvey made landfall, inundated Houston with record rainfall and flooding, celebrity pastor Joel Osteen, is it? Sorry. Yeah. His Lakewood Church, which is based in the region, drew criticism for not making itself available to people affected by the storm. I know that Ryan Burrow had been reporting from one of the areas where I think they... The limit was 5,000 people, and they were already up to like 8,000 now, but they weren't turning anyone away. So people needed a place to find shelter.
Sure.
I went to Snopes.com to see whether or not this is true. It's here's the note that the church posted. Dear Houstonians, Lakewood Church is inaccessible due to severe flooding. We want to help make sure you are safe. Please see the list below for safe shelters around our city, and please share this with those in need. A day later, a post on Lakewood Church's blog read, over the last couple of days, as the enormity of this storm was being realized, we have been working to organize relief efforts for the Houston area with our friend Franklin Graham and the disaster relief organization that he oversees, Samaritan's Purse. Samaritan's Purse has been, since its inception, organized to respond to situations just like Hurricane Harvey. We're grateful to be able to partner with them to provide assistance to the Houston area. We know the need is great. That much is clear. We do not yet know all the ways we can help. Now, the church reportedly seats more than 16,000 people. Again, this is from Snopes.com. Osteen, who owns whose own Houston home is worth $10.5 million, hasn't made any comments regarding possible flooding near the church, because that was the issue. We can't let you in because our church is flooded. So people took to Twitter and everywhere else and said, how dare you?
Right. But there was some question, unless this has changed in the last couple of hours, over whether or not the church was actually flooded. They were saying, the church was saying that for safety reasons, they weren't letting people in. But then people nearby were saying, what safety reasons? We need some shelter. You have it, and you're not providing it.
And Snopes.com reached out to the church trying to find out details of why it was inaccessible. For example, if there was possibly flooding nearby or damage to the building.
Yeah.
And it says, but we have yet to receive a response. But Osteen did put up a following tweet. Our hearts break as we see the damage and destruction of our city. Please join us in helping Houston recover. And then there's a Lakewood Church announcement. We have Ryan Burrow live in Houston at the moment. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing well. And actually, we're about to head over to that that church, Lakewood. It's really next door from the hotel that we've been at. It is not flooded around here directly. I don't know. Some of the images that were posted showed maybe some basement flooding, some parking lot flooding, but that may have kind of drained away at this point. But they are setting it up now to act essentially as a shelter on their second floor, and they're actually going to use it as a distribution site as well. So people can come in, bring supplies, diapers, formula, what have you, and then they will be able to kind of filter that out to the rescue station.
So, Ryan, what's your read on this? Is this somebody at the church? And I'm not specifically going to blame Joel Osteen. But is it somebody at the church just saying, wow, this is awful PR for us, we really have to do something? Or are they being legit and really wanting to help? And why is this help coming now? It should have come days ago.
I'm going to be quite frank on this. There are a couple things going on. First of all, there is a groundswell of opposition to Joel Osteen and pretty much everything he does, just because, you know, he is so prominent in the religious televangelical world, and he does make a lot of money, and so people are, you know, interested in kind of going after him for that, and this is kind of an example of that. Now, I can tell you that you know, many of the roadways are flooded here, and you can't get here on an interstate. You can't. There are only a couple different ways to get in here, and he does not have staff, or at least that church does not seem to have the full staff that they normally would. So as a result, that they maybe just weren't set up for it. I don't know. This could be a whole lot of nothing. And the fact of the matter is, it looks like it will eventually be a distribution site and evacuation center here.
At this point, anyone who can help should help. And I know a lot of people are doing it. There was what are the stories of the Cajun Navy that were coming out and rescuing people on their flat bottom boats? And then did someone try and steal their boats?
I haven't heard that. We've heard about a little bit of looting that's going on. One at a GameStop store that police were able to to actually catch up with the people. There was an armed robbery as well of some evacuees. So police say that we're not going to tolerate that at all. So, you know, don't even try to come to our city and do that. But for the most part, it's just been people trying to kick the water and get into these shelters, which are completely overloaded right now. The George R. Brown Convention Center had 9,000 people at last check, and it sounds as though the city is preparing to open up 2 to 3 additional shelters at some point today.
I had not heard the phrase Cajun Navy until yesterday, and I saw several pictures of it. These are just people in and around the Louisiana area who have boats who have organized. Is that all the Cajun Navy is, or is there more to it than that?
Exactly. Yeah, that's basically voluntary citizen army brigade that's going in to essentially do that, you know, save people and rescue people in these kind of situations.
So, Ryan, yesterday at about this time, we had you on the stream during our bonus hour, but we were talking about the fact that people are still in their houses. Maybe their basement or their lower level or levels are flooded, so they've just kind of moved to whatever the highest point of their house is. That remains intact. That's still going on, and the rain hasn't really subsided much, so it's gotten worse since yesterday, right?
Exactly. And one of the other issues, too, is these reservoirs where the water, not only are they releasing water into the neighborhoods to try to reduce some of the pressure in these reservoirs against the dam, but the water is filled up so high, it continues to flow over either way. So, there's just so much water and nowhere for it to go. They say that some of this water that's flooding in the neighborhoods could last for even a month there. That just shows you, I mean, they haven't even begun the recovery effort at this point, and it could be a long, long time.
And what about the rains that are expected again?
It's still raining now. It sounds like it's going to rain tonight and maybe even into tomorrow morning, possibly as much as 6 inches more. I mean, we've already hit 43 inches in 4 days. I mean, that's insane. That's like all of Seattle in 1 year.
How are you getting around?
We're all in a car. Actually, right now we're traveling together. We're finding the smallest the best routes possible, and we're all going in big SUVs to try to navigate this stuff.
When you say we, you and who else?
TV crew.
Oh, okay. And you know, FEMA, who've been criticized for similar situations, most notably New Orleans. What is their presence like right now?
They're also trying these rescues, and you know, they're aiding and assisting in various ways. The mayor today asking for another 10,000 support for another 10,000 people at shelters. So they're going to supply food. They're going to supply a bunch of different things. I got to run, guys. Unfortunately, I'll be talking with you later. Okay?
Thank you, Ryan.
Right, thanks, Ryan. It's Ryan Burrow in Texas right now, telling us about the situation, which is just dire.
And he is doing a fantastic job making us feel like we're there when we're not. Forgive me for not knowing this, but isn't there like a United Center in Houston somewhere, and is that going to be used for any shelter?
Well, Houston has a couple of sports facilities that I would imagine they must be looking at. Like any sports facilities, they'd be pretty sizable. If you go back to New Orleans where the Saints played, they used that. That was their primary shelter during Hurricane Katrina. So I'm guessing that must be the case. Yeah.
They have Minute Maid Park, which is the baseball, but what's the football? Arena or basketball.
I don't know the name of their... Yeah,
but don't they have one?
Yeah, they do. The Houston Rockets play out there. And yeah, so I would imagine, I mean, I don't know what the situation is at the particular arenas, but if they're usable, I would imagine they want to and have to.
Prayers go out to people.
It's awful. We'll take a quick break and then more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, it's 720 WGN. You and I were talking off the air about the Houston Astros and the Houston Texans. They have been forced to play home games miles away from the flood-stricken city, with players wondering when they'll be able to come back. Astros are going to play a 3-game series against the Texas Rangers at Tropicana Field in St. Pete starting today.
All right, so this is confusing to me, and here's why. You've got two Texas teams playing baseball, a series of baseball games together. And normally what would happen in a case like this, if they could, is they would slide them out of Houston, which they can't play in because of the flooding, and they'd move them to Arlington, Texas, where the Rangers play. But for reasons I don't understand, they have moved them to Florida, to Tropicana Field in Florida.
Do the Rangers have a game?
The Rangers are playing Astros. So I don't know why. It doesn't make sense that the Rangers would reject that series
Well, the Texans, the Houston Texans will wrap up their preseason schedule against the Dallas Cowboys at AT&T Stadium in Arlington instead of NRG Stadium. And Texans cornerback Jonathan Joseph said, you have to go about your business and handle it. But then he went on to say it's kind of hard at the same time to kind of sit there and play football and then think about your family that's back home when there are constant updates going on around the clock about things that are going on in your hometown.
Sure. That must be awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both Astros and Rangers flew to Dallas after games in California on Sunday to await news of where their series would be held. Yeah, I don't know why they'd go to Florida.
I'm confused by that. And some of the Astros players have been upset about that as well. I'm trying to remember who one of the pitchers yesterday made some statement about how selfish this is of the Texas Rangers to make a bad situation even worse and reject this three-game series. I don't know why. I don't know what's in it for them to not play it there.
Well, here's what Rangers general manager John Daniels had to say. He said the team was open to hosting the series in Arlington this week,
yeah,
but had no interest in swapping a series against the Astros later in the season to accommodate this change. He said the Rangers declined partially because of thoughts for the fans, but also because that change would have left the Rangers with a 12-game road trip late in the season.
Well, that seems selfish, doesn't it? I mean, I understand that. I get that. But all they want to do is switch. It's home series and home series. You got one in Arlington. You got the other in Houston. So in a couple of weeks, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You play the games in the other stadium 3 weeks later. I don't understand that.
It does seem selfish when you think of your land is dry.
Right.
That's really all you want,
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah, make it easy for everybody, you would imagine, right? I've got Kevin trying to find, there was some audio, actually video.
He got it.
Did you find it? All right, help me with this, Kevin, because I'm trying to remember the specifics. This is Ted Cruz, and he's on a new show on Fox?
It looks like MSNBC.
Oh, MSNBC, that's right. So they're asking Ted Cruz, who's asked for a flood relief package for Texas, they're asking him essentially why just a few years ago, when there was a similar situation, a flood package, he rejected it. He had the chance to okay it, and he said, no, we can't appropriate this money for flood victims, sorry. But now that it's in Texas, in his home state, all of a sudden he's all for it, which really is, if you're looking at the sheer definition of what politics is, it's this exactly.
That is it.
It's somebody looking out for themselves, mm-hmm, and not for others. I hate to say it, but it's true. So listen to this awkward exchange between MSNBC and Ted Cruz as he explains it, or tries to.
A lot of people are pointing out that you voted against aid for Sandy after that catastrophic storm up in the Northeast, that package back in 2012. And they're pointing at you and saying you're asking for money now when you weren't willing to help the people in the Northeast. What do you have to say to them?
Well, you know, look, there's time for political sniping later. I think our focus
really
needs to be on
sniping,
this crisis,
Senator,
and this disaster.
These are people who needed money and who needed funding right after that storm. I covered those people. Many of them, just like those in Houston, lost absolutely everything they owned.
Well, Katie, of course, that's right. And the accurate thing to say is that I and a number of others enthusiastically and emphatically supported hurricane relief for Sandy. Hurricane relief and disaster relief has been a vital federal role for a long, long time, and it should continue. The problem with that particular bill is it became a $50 billion bill that was filled with unrelated pork. Two-thirds of that bill had nothing to do with Sandy, and what I said then and still believe now is that it's not right for politicians to exploit a disaster and people are hurting to pay for their own political wish list. Disaster relief needs to be focused on the victims of disaster relief, and I supported that for Sandy, disaster relief there, and I would support that anywhere there's a major disaster without getting distracted by political unnecessary pork spending.
That's Katie Turr from MSNBC, who does an excellent job of not just asking the question, but calling him out on the fact that...
Holding his feet to the fire.
Yeah. I mean, he's pinning this on political sniping, and it's not political sniping. It's an honest question. Why is it okay for you to ask for a lot of money for appropriations, which are a good idea, but when some other part of the country needed it after Hurricane Sandy, he was against it. Oh, no, we can't give out that much money.
I got to say, when someone asks you a question and you get defensive before you answer it, there's a good chance you're lying.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, right away. No, this political. She asked a very valid question.
The best question. Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. We'll find out what Steve has. Wendy and I will be on the stream for the bonus hour. If you'd like to join us there, we'd love to have you. Or Steve has the Wintrust Business Lunch. Two great options. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.